John Allen works for the National Catholic Reporter in the US and is one of the world's leading commentators on Catholic affairs. He's among the thousands of journalists who have come to Rome to cover the beatification ceremony for Pope John Paul. So how would he describe this event? And what message is this beatification sending to the Church and the world?
Well, at one level, a beatification obviously always offers the same message, that this person lived a holy life, in the technical language, a life of heroic virtue, and is now in heaven with God, capable of interceding in requests for prayer. And that is true of John Paul II, as it is of all the other beati, blesseds, that have been proclaimed by the Church. But, I mean, at another level, obviously, this beatification is a massive celebration of the life and legacy of one of the most stunningly successful and wildly popular popes of all time. You know, this is a pope who took over the Catholic Church at a moment of sort of doubt and confusion, what a lot of people perceived as drift for the Church, and he gave it a massive sort of infusion of energy. I mean, he was almost like Jolt Cola for the soul. And I think the excitement that he stirred in the Church around the world is, in a sense, symbolized and captured and re-expressed by this beatification.
And how much interest is there among the American public at large in this event?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to remember that John Paul remains massively popular in the United States. There's a new Marist College poll out which finds that 74% of the American public and a stunning 90% of American Catholics believe that John Paul is a worthy candidate for beatification. Now, if you know anything at all about American Catholics, you know that it's hard to get 90% of them to agree on what day of the week it is. The fact that 90% of them would therefore agree that John Paul deserves the honor that's being bestowed upon him in this beatification is nothing short of a kind of a minor miracle. I mean, you could almost argue that's the next miracle for the canonization. And so he remains a pope whose memory and whose influence is very much alive. And that is generating, I think, significant media interest in the United States. All of the major American networks have their A-list reporters and pundits on the ground in Rome to cover the event. It will be closely watched and closely commented upon.
We know what he was like as a pope, and we've been talking lots in these last weeks about his accomplishments, his legacy. But what about him as a man? How would you describe his personality?
Well, I think John Paul II was one of those almost once-in-a-generation guys who had this kind of animal charisma that just dominated any room he was ever in. You know, a wicked sense of humor. Absolutely fearless, you know, willing to say anything to anyone at any time. Marvelous command of gestures and in facial expressions and so forth. I mean, he could communicate more with a withering look or a smile than most of us can in, you know, 1,800 word news analyses. I think, you know, quite, and I think that explains part of the appeal of John Paul. I mean, clearly part of it was the message. Part of it was the deep faith and the palpable sense of holiness he inspired. But part of it, too, was even people who didn't share any of that, didn't share his philosophical convictions, didn't share his spiritual beliefs, nevertheless just liked the guy. I mean, they saw in him what people would describe as a mensch, you know, a real authentic human being, someone who was comfortable in his own skin, who knew what he stood for, but was also interested in where you were coming from. And I think at that human level, that was a kind of universal appeal that was part of the magic of his papacy.
Now, you've been covering the Vatican for many years. Do you have any vivid recollection of one or more anecdote concerning Pope John Paul, you know, maybe some especially memorable remark that he made to you or in your presence that you can share with us?
Well, I'll give you two. One that's me, and then one's an insight into John Paul. The one that's me is I started covering the Vatican in the late 90s, and of course, by that point, John Paul's twilight, in a sense, had already begun. He wasn't quite as communicative as he once was. The first time I had an opportunity to meet him in person was on a papal trip in 2001. We were going to Kazakhstan, and this was 9 days after 9/11, so there's a lot of media interest in that trip and what John Paul would have to say. So it had been a very exhausting trip. At the end of it, those of us who were new had the opportunity to come down and sit next to the Pope in Shepherd One, you know, the papal plane, and have a few moments with him. Now, by that stage in my career, you have to understand that I had probably written several million words about the Pope. I had talked about him for hours on television. I mean, in theory, if someone was going to be capable of coming up with something intelligent to say to him in that moment, you would think it would be me. And yet when I was plunked down in that chair next to him, the sort of awesomeness of the moment sort of overcame me. And the only thing, honest to God, the only thing I could croak out was, Holy Father, it's nice to meet you. I mean, the most banal thing imaginable, and he could tell that I was struggling to come up with something more intelligent to say. And he reached out to me and patted me on the arm and said, it's okay. And then went on to give me a couple of thoughts about what the trip had meant that I didn't even ask. But had I been able to formulate intelligent questions, these would have been great answers. I mean, in other words, he understood. I mean, he'd been in those situations often enough to know that, you know, even people who aren't supposed to be intimidated by him nevertheless were. And he broke that ice on his own. It was a marvelous, not only was it a great sort of communication strategy on his part, it was a marvelous pastoral act. Other story is this. I remember when Jean-Paul went to Greece, which he also did in 2001, I had been asked by Greek national television to do an interview with them. And the question to which the whole interview built was, is Jean-Paul going to apologize for centuries of mistreatment of the Orthodox? And I said, well, you know, look, here's the thing. I mean, Jean-Paul has apologized for many things over the course of the years. He has, in fact, in the past, apologized for mistreatment of the Orthodox. But normally, those apologies are very carefully prepared theologically, and we haven't gotten any hints of that in this trip. So I think my concluding line was that if anybody is coming to this trip expecting an apology, they're likely to be disappointed. They played that interview on Greek national television as the lead-in to the meeting between Jean-Paul and Archbishop Christodoulos, the Patriarch of Athens and all Greece. So literally 5 minutes before the Pope and Christodoulos sat down, there was me saying there's not going to be an apology. And of course, 15 minutes later, Jean-Paul delivered precisely the apology I had just predicted that he was not going to utter. Classic example of how Jean-Paul was, among many other things, a pope of surprises. Just when you thought you had him figured out, when you knew whether he was going to zig or zag, he would pull the wool over your eyes.
I was speaking to John Allen of the National Catholic Reporter and who's also Vatican analyst for CNN. Those wishing to download on their phones Vatican Radio's programming and practical information updates during the beatification of Pope John Paul this coming weekend should go to the following link: http://rv.va/5.